Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Workforce and Business Development Policy and Finance Committee. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Members and testifiers, please make sure that your mics are muted while we get started. This remote hearing is being conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed on the House webcast. With that, I would like to ask the committee legislative assistant, Mr. Badri, to take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker. Baker. Daphne. Daphne,
Frankie present,
Greenman present, Haley, Jergens, Cagle present, Katiza Watun.
Present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson.
Present.
Olson present. Zhang.
Present.
Zhang present. Baker.
Baker present.
Baker present. Daphne.
Chair Daphne is presenting a bill in State Gov, so he'll be joining us.
Sounds good. And Haley? Haley? Chair Noor, we have a quorum.
Members, there's a quorum present. With that, we'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes for March 9, 2022.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kali Kotizo Atun moves the approval of minutes for March 9, 2022. Members, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the minutes for March 9, 2022 are now approved. Members, it's a good day today. On a Friday morning, we're going to be discussing bills that are going to be addressing the need in our state, especially and particularly in the time where we can really do a significant improvement for the welfare of Minnesotans. And this is a good day to be discussing all these great bills. And for the bill authors and the testifiers, we've got a short time limit because we want to take care of many folks. And that means that we keep on time so we can do the work that is necessary for this committee. These bills are going to be for informational hearing, meaning that we're going to be sending a memo to the Chair of Capital Investment, Chair Lee, once we have the hearing and discussed the bills. With that, I'd like to start with the first bill. Vice Chair Agbaje, you have House File 3663. Welcome to the committee this morning, and please proceed with the introduction of your bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So today I'm presenting House File 3663, which appropriates $6 million to the Phyllis Wheatley Center to rebuild Camp Parsons. This camp has been a staple in the community, allowing young people a chance to experience nature's beauty and learning about Earth and other sciences. My testifier will discuss more about the importance of revitalizing this camp and its importance to young people in our community. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Agbaje. So to your testifier, Ms. Burks, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair Noor, Representative Agbaje, and members of the Workforce Business Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you again for considering our proposed $4 million investment, which is included in the governor's budget to restore the Phyllis Wheatley Community Center's Camp Catherine Parsons. My name is Suzanne Burks, and I'm the Executive Director of Phyllis Wheatley Community Center, located in North Minneapolis. Phyllis Wheatley was founded in 1924 and is one of the oldest African-American nonprofit organizations in the state of Minnesota. For more than 66 years, we have owned and operated the 106-acre camp in Watertown, Minnesota. The camp was named after Catherine Parsons, who gifted the property to us to focus on disadvantaged, underrepresented, at-risk youth to ensure they have access to quality outdoor enrichment experiences. We believe investing in the camp will reverse the underrepresentation, underinvestment in these types of programs and experiences, particularly for African-American youth in North Minneapolis, however, for at-risk youth in general. We also strongly believe that the camping experiences at the Camp Catherine Parsons will address three critical areas that we believe we're all concerned about. The first is crime and safety. The camp will provide short-term experience that will have long-term life-changing benefits. And I just point to two of your current and past colleagues who attended the camp as youth, Senator Bobby Joe Champion and former Senator Jeff Hayden, respectively. The second is to focus on the achievement gap. We will be designing enrichment programs with our partner, the Science Museum of Minnesota, to intentionally address the achievement gaps in STEM. And lastly, climate change. We hope by exposing the youth to the importance of conservation will spark an interest in becoming environmentalists to protect our precious resources such as water, trees, and more. In addition to the benefits young people will receive at the Camp Catherine Parsons, will boast unique environmental characteristics. In recognition of the camp's importance to its environmental role in the community, Phyllis Wheatley and the community, the Minnesota Land Trust, entered into a conservation easement agreement in 2019 to protect 90% of the land from future development and preserve the environmental integrity of the camp into perpetuity. Generations of African-American youth have spent summers at the camp, and it is considered one of the most unique experiences of African-American culture, especially in North Minneapolis. Countless youth have returned to North Minneapolis once they've been to the camp, re-energized with new insights on how to incorporate lessons they've learned at the camp, especially around nature, into their daily lives. Sadly, beginning in the late 1980s, the camp began to deteriorate, and a lot of it was due to the major infrastructure failures resulting from more than decades of deferred maintenance. These infrastructure failures and maintenance issues forced the camp to halt all camp activities in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Restoring the camp will cost about $5.5 million before it can be really provide year-round programming, including camping, environmental education, youth violence diversion, and STEAM education. Of the $5.5 million budget, we are requesting an investment of $4 million from the legislature. The remaining $1.5 million will be acquired through the combination of proceeds from the conservation easement with the Minnesota Land Trust and philanthropic investments. The following are our confirmed partners: Mortenson Construction, Snow Cry Lake Architects, Cohen and Partners Landscape Architects, Ask, Fredrickson and Byron, and more. We are also in early discussions with several public nonprofit programmatic partners about how to activate the camp and incorporate their programs into our offerings, and especially around our capital fundraising concerns. It is important. Very important time in the history of Phyllis Wheatley Community Center, as well as the camp. Phyllis Wheatley nears more than 100 years in 2014, and it is important, 2024, and it is important that we advance our mission, which is to create pathways for individuals to consider their strengths and take control of their futures. Likewise, the restoration of the camp will enable us to continue our work to ensure that at-risk youth have access to unique, culturally enriching camping experiences. To that end, we also see that building the relationships with our neighbors in Carver County, Watertown, Minnesota, is really critical to that mission and experiences. Thank you, Chair Noor, Representative Abaje, and members of this committee for your time and consideration of our request. At this time, we have our team available if you have any questions.
See no questions from the members. Thank you so much, Ms. Max, for your testimony. This is much needed project that we need to look into. And with that, I thank you for your testimony today. Vice Chair Agbaje, today is your day. We appreciate you fighting and championing to do great work for our state. You have House File 3664.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The second bill today is House File 3664. This bill is meant to build a regional health and wellness center in North Minneapolis for young people and their families. The V3 Sports Center is poised to become an economic development engine. The center has an Olympic-sized swimming pool that, once installed, will be able to host swimming lessons, meets, and competitions, not only for North Minneapolis, but for the state and the wider region. The bill requests $15 million for a phase of the program to complete design and construction of the project. Once set up, the V3 Sports Center will be the hub that better connects downtown and North Minneapolis. With me today is the V3 CEO, who can describe the need and importance of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Sorry. Thank you, Representative Agbaje. My name is Erica Binger, and I'm a coach, founder, and executive director of V3, and I thank each of you for hearing and considering our proposal. Your support of our proposal will be transformational to an under-resourced, marginalized community, creating a North Minneapolis asset and regional destination in Minnesota. When fully developed, it will provide more than 80 full and part-time jobs, as well as bring over 40,000 new visitors annually who will spend money in our community, helping to create more economic stability, business opportunities, and equity. The V3 Center is easily accessible via public transportation, walking and biking, and is located near Highway 94. It will showcase the 2021 Olympic Trials 50-meter event pool with 600 spectator seats and 400 on deck. It will have an instructional pool to chip away at the nearly 3 times higher drowning disparities in communities of color, workout areas, athletic programming, and a therapy pool, which North Minneapolis does not have. STEAM integrated programming utilizing the building as a classroom so youth can learn, for example, about water filtration, event production, music curation, marketing, et cetera, which will lead to career explorations and pathways and ultimately jobs. A cafeteria adding to the dearth in sit-down restaurants in our community, incubator spaces to enable new businesses to test their ideas and then spin off. It incorporates drop-in childcare to alleviate an obstacle to health and wellness in our community, 4 multi-use courts that can host small and large events like tournaments, career fairs, graduation parties, et cetera, bringing resources and jobs back into the community. Your allocation of $15 million will help us continue to move forward on the center and leverage other resources. Over the next 30 years, the V3 Center will generate over $200 million into the local economy. Instead of being the epicenter of some of the worst disparities, we can emulate a model of equity. This is incredibly important, as I've witnessed firsthand what our programming does and how it impacts youth and families. Your investment will contribute to the center of collaboration, ensure our disproportionately large number of youth and families have access to programming and infrastructure, and contribute to the economic and social transformation of North Minneapolis. Thank you again for hearing and considering our proposal.
Thank you, Ms. Binger, for your testimony. I don't see any questions from the committee. And this is one of the recommendations that was added in the governor's recommendation. So looking forward to a great project coming up there. Thank you so much for your testimony. Vice Chair Agbaje, you have House File 3790. Please introduce your bill and proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. House File 3790 continues on with the theme of supporting our youth. This bill is requesting $2 million in programming funds for a youth center in North Minneapolis. The second request is for $6 million in capital investment to acquire a property, design, and construct a new youth center facility. North Minneapolis has limited places where young people can go after school, be around trusted adults, and have a safe place to play and learn. The state's investment in our young people starts at the beginning, and we cannot wait until we need to intervene after something has gone wrong. Having a dedicated youth center, especially one that can complement the burgeoning programs in my district, will be beneficial to positive outcomes for young people across the city, but particularly on the north side. And with that, I'll turn it over to two testifiers who can explain more.
I see the first testifier is Dr. Clarence Hightower. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Clarence Hightower. I am Executive Director of Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County. And thank you so much for this opportunity to talk about a project that is of interest to the young folks in our community. This project, as described, responds to both to the violence that has both impacted and affected African-American youth in our community in a way that very few people can understand. The project, the Rosa Parks Center for African-American Youth Development, suggests a tripartite involvement from, first of all, the Minneapolis Public Schools, where they would sell the project a building for $1, and it would be one of their surplus school buildings. That school building would be operated and managed by Community Action. And then with the support of funds from the legislature. But it will really be ran by young folks in our community. One of the things that we're really excited about is the addition of a STEM program that Summit Academy OIC is poised to bring to this endeavor and really create a space for young folks in our community. The visionary of this project is Al Flowers Jr., and he's going to join me in sharing his excitement for this project. AJ, please.
Al Flowers Jr., please. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, I'm Alfred Flowers Jr. I'm the project coordinator for the Young People Task Force of the Unity Community Mediation Team, which is an organization centered around transformation, accountability, consequences, and transparency for police and community within our community of Minneapolis. As a Young People Task Force, we conducted a series of conversations throughout Minneapolis to speak to our young people to ask them exactly what it is that they believe can help them have a better success moving towards in the future. Without a doubt, all our young people unequivocally said that they need a place of safety and refuge where equity and reconciliation are standards. Youth aspirations are cultivated and celebrated, where African-American youth are inspired, encouraged, and guided to holistic, self-sustaining futures of economic opportunity and stability. Also, what we was able to do within that time frame, we was able to identify seven major service components that our young people feel as though is going to help them get to the next level in life and be successful. Those seven components were, number one, it was self-actualization and self-value. Number two was reconciliation and mediation. Number three was economic development. Number four was education. Number five was holistic health, wellness, and safety. Number six was recreation and creative expression. And number seven was administrative leadership. And these are the things that our young people identified as what has helped them. We also had 10 center principles, and I would love to go in farther detail when we meet farther, that our young people identify which will help this center be successful. This is a very important project for the north side of Minneapolis, especially considering the fact that last year we had an uptick in violence. Over 90 murders we had within Minneapolis, and 75% of those murders was African-American. We had over 600 shootings, and 85% of those shootings was African-American. And I had a young person tell me, who was 12 years old, he said, AJ, I just want to make it to the simple age of 16. It was terrifying me to even think about that. But when you think of the fact that we had five children under the age of 12 over North Minneapolis that passed away last year due to murder, including two infants who were killed in the womb at the time of a shooting. When you think about that type of consideration that our young people had and what they got to deal with on an everyday basis of trauma, we believe that this center will be a center that can bring all those integrative services together for our young people so that our young people can be heard, our young people can be recognized, and our young people can get the reconciliation and mediation they need. And with that, I will say thank you and open it up for any questions.
And thank you so much, Alfred Flowers Jr., AJ Jr. I know your dad is saying hello, and I wanted to say hello to Al at the same time. So This is important. You know, our youth need to be seen. These are proven methods of trying to make sure that we invest. We are here because of the disinvestment that has been happening in our communities, particularly Northside. And I think this is an important conversation for our committee today. I see Representative Cagle, you had a quick question or statement.
Sorry, I just wanted to say that. Hi to Dr. Hightower. I used to work with Dr. Hightower and just wanted to let him know I miss our fantasy football talks.
Good to hear your voice and seeing your face, Representative.
All right. I don't see any other comments from any member or questions. With that, we move to the next bill. Vice Chair Agbaje, you do have House File 4040.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you to members of the committee. House 4040 is the last bill I have in front of you this morning. This bill supports the Northside Economic Opportunity Network's request for $6 million to construct a food business incubation facility. NEON works with entrepreneurs across North Minneapolis as they work to build wealth and create jobs in their community. One of the fastest growing industries is in the food prep and catering business, and by having a food business incubator on the Northside, low and moderate income entrepreneurs will have access to a commercial kitchen in addition to the program supports provided by NEON to help their businesses thrive. To discuss the specifics of the project and the need, I have with me this morning NEON's CEO.
I see we have Warren McLean on as a testifier. Please welcome to the committee, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you for a while. So he's like, that's Nora, that's my friend.
Can we mute those who are unmuted?
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
You're muted, Mr. McLean. Sorry about that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Warren McLean, and I'm president and CEO of the Northside Economic Opportunity Network. NEON is in the process of planning and constructing a food business incubator in North Minneapolis. The total cost of the project is $12.5 million. We're asking for the state to partner with NEON for providing $6 million from the general fund. I want to thank Representative Agbaje and Representative Lee for authoring our bill. NEON was started in 2006. Our mission is to build wealth for low to moderate income entrepreneurs in North Minneapolis. In the last 2 years, NEON has provided 11,560 hours of technical assistance and $6.8 million in loans and grants to 2,256 clients. The incubator itself will be located on a 2110 23rd Avenue North in Minneapolis. It is going to be next to the Capri Theater. It's going to be a 21,600 foot square facility. It'll have 24 private kitchens, around 3,000 square feet of community shared kitchen. It'll allow 40 or 50 food trucks to be accessed by clients, and 270 food business clients will be served each year. During the construction phase of the business incubator, it will produce 261 jobs. And once the food business incubator is in full operation, it'll produce another 265 permanent jobs. This facility itself is based on another facility in Chicago called the Hatchery, which is a 65,000 square foot facility. This will be a third of the size of that. That facility is located in West Chicago, which is the toughest part of Chicago, but it's been a boom to Chicago in that area. And it's been a very catalytic center there. I just want to describe our committee. We have a campaign committee that will help raise the additional funds. And that committee consists of the following members: Doug Baker, David Mortensen, Vance Opperman, Steve Wellington, Peter McLaughlin, Tim Baylor, Patrick Troska, and our chair is James Pierce. To date, we've raised about $3.8 million, and we have other opportunities pending. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present, and I welcome any questions.
Yeah, I'm okay. Now he just finished. I missed him because I was talking to Laura.
Members and also to the testifiers, please make sure that you're muted so we can get going with the hearing. So And if we are done with your bill, you may be able to watch it from the House webcast. You're not going to miss in case of any questions that may come up later. With that, thank you so much, Mr. McLean, for all the work. I know the CDFIs like yours, Nian, you have uplifted many businesses during the difficult time we had during the COVID, the pandemic, and supporting them. I don't see any question or discussion from members. So with that, that concludes the Representative Ag Budgets Day at the Workforce and Business Development. Thank you so much for presenting all those bills and to the testifiers. The next bill is House File 3546. Vice Chair Hassan, please introduce your bill and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I can find my document. House File, thank you for giving me the opportunity to present House File 3546, which is an ask for $5 million for Norway House expansion and renovation. Norway House was built by Norwegian immigrants and is part of our district's history. It now sits in the heart of our district and it's part of ever-growing immigrants, non-Norwegian, of course, many of them, and the native community. This is really important to our community and to the district. And I'll have the executive director of Norway House explain the renovation project and what we're trying to do here.
I have Ms. Christina Carlton. As a testifier, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Noor and Representative Hassan. Thank you for having us. My name is Christina Carlton. I'm the executive director of Norway House, the Norwegian National Center in Minneapolis. We are located, and I will share my screen for a little PowerPoint presentation. I hope that's all right. We are located on Franklin Avenue, close to Chicago Avenue in Minneapolis. And we have been there now, a staple in the community for about 6 years. You see it on my screen in the background here on Franklin. We are introducing, hopefully considering a $5 million to complete our expansion of the Innovation and Culture Center, which is a $20 million project, expansion of our existing 12,000 square feet that we currently have to complete our vision of becoming the National Norwegian Center in the United States. We are located in a challenged neighborhood that we are wanting to be a positive impact for our community. We are partnering with several organizations, including the American Indian Center down the street and other organizations with programming and events. Our mission is to connect the United States with contemporary Norway through arts, business, and culture. We do that through our programs that we have at Norway House. We have our peace initiatives that we host every year where we have current events. We have tenant organizations that are located at Norway House. They bring in new immigrants from the community to work on things like how to get a social security number, how to file for driver's licenses. We are located in that community. That is where Norwegian immigrants first arrived about 100 years ago on the Norway block is what we are calling it. And we have the Minneskirken, which is the Norwegian Lutheran Memorial Church on the same campus with us. And they still have Norwegian services every Sunday. And we're proud to be a partner of them in Minneapolis. We have a business community where we're introducing Nordic entrepreneurs and companies into the US market. And we are doing that as a platform at our venue. We are now expanding 18,000 square feet, and we're hoping that this will be done. we are currently in the process. We are building it, and we have been received funding from the Norwegian government and over 1,000 Norwegian Americans that are in the Minnesota. Over 1 million Minnesotans claim Norwegian heritage. As you can see, this is the construction that's going on currently on Franklin and Elliott. And over the years, and as I mentioned, we are in a challenged neighborhood. We had to board up, but we were not harmed during the riots. The Native American community actually stepped up and patrolled the community, and we're so thankful for what they did. We would like to be a positive influence on the neighborhood, and we are so proud to be located in Minneapolis. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, for allowing us to be here today, and thank you for our consideration for the $5 million to complete the campaign.
Thank you so much, Ms. Carlton, for your presentation. I sometimes we have to show our different cultures and heritage and groups, and I know some of us are proud to be able to see that we're keeping that culture alive. So thank you so much for the presentation. I don't see any question or discussion from any members. With that, I wanted to say thank you to Vice Chair Hassan and to the testifier. The next bill is House File 3566. As I understand, it's going to be presented by Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing this bill today. House File 3566, I will be presenting and pinch hitting for Representative Juergens, who was unable to make it today, is an appropriation for the Hastings Civic Arena for $1,450,000 for upgrades and needed improvements and an addition of some solar panels. The Hastings Civic Arena is a hub for the city of Hastings. You know, as my kids played hockey growing up, I've spent many an early morning and some evenings and lots of time there. People come from all over to enjoy the use of this facility. So I believe we have one testifier with us today, Mr. Chair. That would be Chris Jenkins, the Hastings Parks and Rec Director.
I see two, but Chris Jenkins, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representatives, Representative Frankie, thanks for stepping in for Representative Juergens today. I want to thank Representative Juergens for bringing this forward today. My name is Chris Jenkins. I'm the Parks and Recreation Director for the City of Hastings. And what we are talking about is the Hastings Civic Arena. This facility has been a staple in our community since 1974. So we're approaching 50 years for that, the East Rink, we call it, with the barn style roof. Hopefully you guys got the information sheet that we shared. So what we're looking at is a refrigeration plant upgrade. We are still on an R22 Freon system. If you are not aware, R22 can no longer be manufactured or imported. So we are at an end of life system, and we are looking to convert that to an ammonia-based system, a much more environmentally friendly refrigeration, and much more efficient. So we're looking to save some money on energy as well there. This total project is estimated at $2.9 million. Our ask is for $1.45 million, and the city will match the other 50%. As Representative Frankie mentioned, this also includes a new roof for our West Rink, which was constructed in 1998, so it's a little bit younger, but it does help serve the hockey and skating needs for the city of Hastings, the city of Cottage Grove, Farmington, Rosemount, and other regions as well. It is a economic driver for the city of Hastings, particularly when you have 36 teams in town spending money here in Hastings at our restaurants, grocery stores, gas stations, shops, all of that. But that roof on the West Rink is about 23 years old, and it does need to be replaced. We have some leaking issues, and we want to make sure that this asset can serve the community for another 50 years. As Representative Frankie also mentioned, the project does include installation of a 160-kilowatt solar array on top of that west roof after it is replaced. So this can also help to offset the electrical needs of this facility and potentially put some electricity back into the grid. That is the basics of our project. It is this facility, as I mentioned, 50 years old. It's served this region. It has served players from the very first time on skates and trained them up to be professional hockey players, collegiate hockey players, and Disney on Ice skaters, who she now is back at the Civic Arena and runs the Riverblade Skating School. So she's bringing that skill, talent, and expertise back to the youth in this region. And hopefully they can reach their dreams as well. So that is what I have for you this morning. I can certainly stand for any questions. And thanks again. You guys have a lot of great bills and great projects out there.
Thank you so much, Mr. Jenkins. Do we have Dan testifying today?
No, Chair, we do not. Just myself.
All right. Just a quick question. Is the Civic Arena a city property which may qualify for the GEO bonds rather than the cash appropriation?
Yes, sir. It is a city facility, part of the Parks and Recreation Department. And I believe it is also in the bonding bill this year and was part of the governor's suggestion.
All right. So most of these bills are usually the cash appropriation that goes through deed. So the way the bill was drafted is to request cash appropriation. We'll take a look at that and figure out the best way to forward that information to the capital investment. So thank you so much, Mr. Jenkins. So any discussion from members? Seeing none, I just wanted to say thank you so much for the testimony and thank you, Representative Frankie, for presenting the bill 3566 for Representative Juergens. So thank you. I know Vice
Chair. Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Vice Chair Zhang is in another committee presenting a bill.
Mr. Chair, I'm back.
You're back? All right, great. Good to see you. So you have House File 3628. Please introduce your bill and proceed.
3628. Let me pull up my notes here. Yes, House File 3628 is a bonding request for the African Economic Development folks. And so I will keep this very brief and let Mr. Gene Galugu speak more.
Mr. Galgelo, welcome to the committee again. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. You're muted, Mr. Galgelo.
I'm sorry. I didn't know I was muted. Good morning, Chair Noor, Lead Hamilton, and Member of Committee. My name is Gene Galgelo, founder and the president and CEO at African Economic Development Solutions, a nonprofit organization that serves African immigrants in Minnesota. I'm here to testify on House File 3628. With me, I have one testifier who will share about the project and experience and the challenge and opportunity for this project. Also, I want to thank Representative Zhang for his dedication, leadership, and support to African immigrants in Minnesota. AEDS provides business development training, technical assistance, lending, financial literacy, home ownership, workforce development, and credit placemaking programs to African immigrants. The Africa Plaza project is the project what we're requesting for. AEDS seek $3 million to activate a vacant and condemned building in the Hamlin Midway neighborhood into a tax-generating commercial asset. Located at 678 Snelling Avenue North, the building was originally 1920s era, a former Chevrolet dealership. After its rehabilitation, it will house immigrant-owned grocery stores, retails, cultural museum, and AEDS staff office. The project will help stabilize the neighborhood commercial corridor, serve the cultural food need for immigrant population, and provide taste of Africa cuisine and culture for large community as well. Expected the result, we expect this to create about 50 jobs, increased labor income about 3.5 million. Value bring value added 6.4 million. Total output is about 11 million. The total local and federal tax little under $1 million. The building will serve as a center for cultural entrepreneurship and revitalize the neighborhood. I ask for your support to this project that will transform the neighborhood. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Galgalu. And do you have another testifier for today's bill?
I believe there's one more person.
Lisa.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Kugland. Also, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm Lisa Kugler. I'm the development consultant for this project, and I have two points to make. The first is I wanted to tell you some things that I didn't know before I started this project. One is the African immigrant community in the Twin Cities is the third largest in the nation. The only ones bigger are in New York and Washington, D.C., and it's the most ethnically diverse. There's many, many countries that are represented here. Also, the American Business Survey found that in 2018, 30% of new businesses were founded by immigrants, and 25% of new businesses were founded by people who did not have a high school diploma. So immigrant businesses clearly employ people who have language or credential problems that keep them out of the larger job market. The other point I wanted to make is that owning a small business is a historic path for immigrants in this country since the very beginning. The second thing is, you won't necessarily remember that I tell you that African cuisine is the next food trend, but it is. And as a community, we have some natural advantages to become the African food capital, in part because we have many countries and many choices. So what this project will be is a food hub, which helps business-to-business transactions to share the marketing and to maximize the market for farmers, manufacturers, and distributors. So this is more than a building. It's the start of a new microeconomy. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kugler, for your presentation. I know food brings people together, and somehow it's early in the morning. Some of us are starting to get hungry with the discussion about food and the Ethiopian, the restaurant that was impacted by the civil unrest that AEDS, the Ethiopian restaurant. So I'm grateful for all those works that are happening. Any discussion, members? I see none. We move to the next bill. So thank you to Vice Chair Zhong and to the testifiers. We have Chair Gomez's bill. One second. I don't want to get mixed up with all the good bills that I have. It's Chair Pinto, sorry. Chair Pinto, House File 3908. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce the bill, Chair Pinto. Maybe there's a reason why I skipped Chair Pinto. So we'll come back to that bill. We have Chair Gomez, House File 3927. Please introduce that bill and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, sorry to interrupt. Just wanted to, we got a request from Vice Chair Zhang if we could just hear his bill next. He's waiting to hear another bill in State Gov. So we could have his bill 3973 next.
All right, Vice Chair Zhong, I know you are trying to go between two committees this morning. House File 3973. Sorry, Chair Gomez, I know you will agree with me. We just need to take care of our Vice Chair. Go ahead, Vice Chair Zhong. Did we lose him already?
I think we may have lost him already. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Oh, well, he did. He got the chance and he lost. So back to you, Chair Gomez. House File 3927.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know things get kind of hectic these last weeks before deadlines, so thanks for your flexibility. Appreciate the chance to present this bill to the committee. So House File 3927 is a $27.8 million for Pillsbury House and Theater, which is a project of Pillsbury United Communities. It's a beloved and trusted by community despite its crumbling condition and kind of cramped facility. And it's located at the intersection of 35th and Chicago in South Minneapolis. Pillsbury House and Theater is a place that inspires people to dream and build better futures through innovative programs that begin with early childhood education. They have a really great childcare center there and continue through life with offerings for seniors. They do classes for folks with disabilities. They do a lot of really interesting kind of like art that goes out into community. It has a black box theater, but also, you know, the people who run it are public artists who understand the way that like art needs to meet people in community where they're at. And so they have just done a wide array of community-based art projects, as well as kind of like that folds in with equitable economic development, which is sort of another focus of theirs. They're home to more than 11, the theater itself is home to more than 11 programs, four organizations, and they just have really outgrown their not fully accessible facility. Our Center for Creativity, Community, and Culture, celebrating 140 years, and are working to be ready for the next phase of their life. Pillsbury House anchors the four South Minneapolis neighborhoods that converge at George Floyd Square and bring what art, the best that arts has to offer in, with, and for the community with high artistic expertise and an extensive network of community partners. They're a national leader in creative community development, and they serve as a powerful example of arts integrated cross-sector collaboration that improves local quality of life. And I have a testifier here to chat more about the specifics of the program.
Very well, Chair Gomez, I see Adair Mosni. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Adair Mosley, President and CEO of Pillsbury United Communities. Thank you to Representative Gomez for your leadership and Chair Noor for the opportunity to present the bill and the other committee members. What we are proposing is a studio technical arts campus that will require the acquisition to be able to develop job training programs in media, theater, and tech trades. Particularly for Black and Brown young people in our community, and also the expansion of the Pillsbury House and facility. Representative Gomez did an excellent job of describing the impact that this Pillsbury House and Theater has been a mainstay and cultural institution in the South Minneapolis community. Just to give a little bit of context about the economy in terms of arts and culture, it is known that every dollar that the state invests in nonprofits, arts, and culture, it is matched by over $5 from other resources. So it's a significant amount of economic impact. After the loss of numerous foundational nonprofit organizations in the arts, the creative workforce has seen a significant loss in opportunity and access to career launching experience. So we've seen kind of categorical disinvestment in our arts and culture institutions, specifically those that have more proximity to Black and Brown communities. As Representative Gomez mentioned, but to punctuate this even further, the economic impact currently is 40 plus fully employed artists are with the theater, and we propose an additional 35 jobs will be created. And currently, theater and media outlets are dominated by a particular group. While there is a commitment to diversity with the industries, there's not an on-ramp specifically for youth of color. And so currently, there is only one Black costume designer in the Twin Cities. Jobs in theater and media are growing, good-paying union jobs. and overall employment of broadcast sound and video technicians is projected to grow by 21% by the year 2030. So when we think about the opportunity that we could be tapping into to build a creative economy here, we are trying to create that destination at 35th and Chicago. And I certainly don't have to remind you all that only a few blocks away was the devastating murder of George Floyd. And so when we think about the revitalization of this particular corridor, this will be catalytic and transformative for the South Minneapolis community and more broadly our region. Thank you for the opportunity to present today.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mosley, for your presentation and also engaging us to rethink how we fund our arts and culture and different programming. Any discussion members? I don't see any. Just wanted to say thank you, Chair Gomez. Since you already have the floor, I see Chair Pinto, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to present your next bill, Chair Gomez, House 539-28.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to just quickly, because Mr. Mosley, one of my favorite things that's going to happen in this Pillsbury House Theater project is that we're going to move our, we have a low power FM station in the, on the south side called KRSM Radio, and it's just such an incredibly important community resource and asset where they're training young people in how to do radio shows, do podcasting, and it's just really become this really vital source of public information. And you can hear my nine-year-old son, he does some station IDs on there. And so he's like, Mom, I'm a voice actor, just so you know. So you can tune in to 98.3 and check that out. But thank you, Mr. Mosley. Now,
do they have an app so that we can tune in to that?
Do they have an app? I don't actually know.
We're working on a podcast to be able to coalesce all the shows, so we'll get one developed.
That's all right, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Gomez, thanks for your indulgence.
House File 3928.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks again, committee members, for hearing about this bill. So House File 3928 is Parents in Community Action, or PICA's, request for $6 million to renovate their existing workforce development facility. So PICA was founded by Head Start parents 50 years ago, and they have 13 centers in Hennepin County that serve 2,500 children and families. And this funding will support increasing childcare classrooms at PICA's Minneapolis Training Center and increase the capacity of their workforce development initiatives. Their model increases teacher diversity for early childhood educators through their lab school dual functioning model. And during a program year, about 200 participants complete one or more of PICA's workforce development training programs, expanding their workforce development and training center facility to accommodate more trainees in a dedicated training space will allow PICA to increase that number by more than 120 trainees per year. PICA is currently the largest trainer of teachers of color in Minnesota and serves 13% of early Head Start eligible infants and toddlers in Hennepin County. Mr. Rico Alexander has joined me today to chat a little bit more about the project. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Alexander, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Representative Gomez, and good morning, Chairperson Noor and committee members. My name is Rico Alexander. I'm the Executive Director for Parents and Community Action, PICA. We currently provide comprehensive early childhood services to over 2,500 infants, toddlers, preschoolers, and pregnant mothers in Hennepin County. In addition, we have over 52 years of experience in training and workforce development programming. PICA is requesting funds to renovate its early childhood facility in Minneapolis in an effort to expand our lab school and consolidate all of our training programs under one roof. A $6 million state funding request will cover 75% of the total project cost of $8 million. The remaining 25% of funding for the project has already been secured from multiple funding sources. PICA has supported hundreds of individuals from low-income and diverse backgrounds in obtaining certificates and credentials, including child development associates, bachelor's and master's degrees, commercial bus driver's license, food service manager certification, and family service credentials, all meaning full-time living wage jobs. Our staff is racially and ethnically reflective of the children and families that we serve. 88% of our staff of over 400 are people of color. 100% of our teachers have a college degree, most of whom acquired it through the support of PICA and its training programs. PICA is fiscally and programmatically sound. We have over 40 years of property management experience in building and renovation. We currently operate 14 locations throughout Hennepin County, maintaining all of them in excellent condition. PICA has long-term collaborative agreements with public schools, health and dental entities, homeless shelters, chemical dependency programs, multiple other service providers, as well as colleges and universities. We are one of only 9 of over 2,000 National Head Start programs nationwide designated as National Head Start Program of Excellence. In closing, I would urge you to support House File 3928. This will allow PICA to continue the job of providing supportive pathways to work for our most disenfranchised populations. I would now like to introduce you to Adrian Pastin Diaz, one of our teachers who has been successful in obtaining multiple credentials and certifications through PICA's professional development program and training.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Let me make sure I get her on here.
Good morning, Chairperson and Mayor and community members. My name is Adriana Pastin-Diaz, and I'm a Head Start teacher at Parents and Community Action in Minneapolis. I'm here to tell you my story and how my family and I have benefited from PICA. I was born in Mexico and raised with my grandparents. My family at that time consisted of my husband, my daughter, and a baby on the way when I moved to Minnesota in 2005. I got a job at a restaurant, and one of my coworkers had told me about PICA. I came to PICA in 2008 to inquire about PICA and ended up signing my children up to attend PICA. When I met one of my children's teacher, she immediately told me about becoming a parent trainer, not knowing that this would be the beginning of my career at PICA. I started my parent training in 2010, working in the infant and toddler room. While in the infant and toddler room, I learned so much about the development of young children. This experience not only helped me get a glimpse into PICA, but it also gave me the insight to the development of my own children, being a young mom. After completing my 96 hours of parent training, I decided that this was something that I wanted to pursue to apply to be a parent training intern in the intern program working with infant and toddlers. I work full-time in early Head Start classroom learning what it takes to be a teacher, how to do a lesson plan, and interacting with the children. During this time, as part of the internship, I was able to attend PICA CDA program, Child Development Associate, a nationally credentialed early childhood certificate. This credential includes completing 120 hours of training, 450 hours of classroom experience, writing a portfolio, and passing a test. After completing my CDA and my internship, I was hired to be a teacher at PICA. I began my career working a full-time program operating 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 12 months per year. I also work in a preschool classroom and a collaborative program. The collaborative program is a program where Minneapolis and PICA staff work together in a classroom teaching children with special needs. I am very lucky to work in a very diverse program where the staff reflects the children and families, both in culture and language. Having diverse teachers is very important to me and for the children. I wanted my children to be with teachers that look and talk like them. My three children graduated from PICA, and they still remember their experiences and how happy they were knowing that I was working at PICA. They were always excited to go to school and play with their classmates. I would also like to point out that I graduated in 2019 from Minneapolis Community and Technical College through PICA. Being the first in my family to obtain a degree in college, my life has changed so much with with being part of FICA. I would have never thought that I would be where I am because of this career in FICA. My family has benefited both financially and culturally. At FICA, we're not only given a head start to children, but I was given a head start to becoming a teacher in this program.
I didn't want to cut you off on the testimony, but I just wanted to say, you know, we have got other bills. If you can wrap up your testimony, I appreciate that.
Okay. My children and I have other children. Well, I just want to say, as a teacher of color and because of the opportunities I was given, I now have the credentials, full-time job, and a security knowing that that I have the skills, knowledge, and desire to make the world better for children and families. My life story is living through. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. As we all know, Early Start is key to the lives of many young people, and we appreciate all the work that is being done at FICA and also those who are being served. So thank you so much. I don't see any discussion from any of the members. We now thank you, Chair Gomez, for bringing your bills. Looking forward to supporting very great programs that you have presented to us. So thank you. The next bill, we go back to Chair Pinto, 3908, House File 3908. Please proceed with the introduction of the bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. My apologies for before, and I have to put in a little plug for the bills you just heard as the House Early Childhood Chair. They're great, great bills. Thank you, Chair Gomez. So members, the bill before you would establish an Ethiopian Community Center. Right now, there is an Ethiopian Community Center in our state, and it's a little office on University inside of a really big building, just a little office and not a place where the community can gather, engage. This is something that I've been working on for several years and really excited by. I'd like to turn to my testifier, if I may, Mr. Chair, and then I'll have some comments after that.
All right. I do see you have two testifiers, Duane Dutrilli. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. I have Gudgirma. Please welcome to the committee. Sorry, many bills that you keep on skipping, which. So sorry about that. Mr. Girma Yismael, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and committee members. My name is Girma Yismael. I am the chair of the Building Committee for the Ethiopian Community in Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Pinto, for sponsoring our bill, and Chair Noor for being a co-author on the bill. We are humbly asking for $2.5 million to purchase and renovate a building which will serve as an Ethiopian Community Center in the heart of the Twin Cities. The building we plan to purchase is located in the Midway area, which is an area that the Ethiopian community is very familiar with and is accessible by various forms of transportation. The center will be a hub for Ethiopians residing in Minnesota. It will help facilitate interactions with Ethiopian Americans, the larger Minnesota communities, to pave the way for easier integration into Minnesota. The center will assist the young, the elderly, job seekers, students, and newcomers to become contributing members of their new home and attain the American dream. Specifically, we'll use this space to teach about our languages, culture, art, and provide entertainment. Celebrate cultural holidays and special events. Gather in times of need, like mourning when somebody passed away. Workforce development, including interviewing skills, resume writing, job training, coordinate mentoring programs, primarily for high school students who are college bound, facilitate support groups and offer counseling services, translate documents of various kinds, connect with our community and the state at large. Thank you for taking the time today to learn about our vision for an Ethiopian Community Center in Minnesota. We look forward to welcoming you all to the center when it's up and running. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Noor. And I believe Mr. Yuzma is the only testifier. I think we have somebody else on to answer questions if necessary. I just wanted to highlight for members that this really is an extraordinary opportunity. We have Ethiopian Minnesotans in all of our districts. And as Mr. Yuzma said, they need the chance to gather. This is where human beings, we need to be with one another, and the chance to celebrate and the chance to mourn and the chance to pass along culture. And many of our other communities in Minnesota have those spaces, and the Ethiopian community does not have that space. I have a number of Ethiopian Minnesotans in my district, which is a very particular interest for me, but again, we all do as well. And this is just a terrific opportunity to let this group of Minnesotans be able to gather together and be with one another in a place that they have not had that chance to at all up until now.
Thank you so much, Chair Pinto. As our state grows in different demographic, we need to be able to look into how we can integrate different communities, and Ethiopian community plays a major role in our state. So thank you so much, Mr. Girma Yosmal, for your presentation. I see, with that, thank you, Chair Pinto. I don't see any question or discussion from members. I go back to Vice Chair Jay Jong's bill. House File 3973, Vice Chair Jong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that's seeking appropriation to build a new community center on the east side of St. Paul that would house a health center and youth development. I have two testifiers here today to speak on this project, and so I'll keep this very brief and hand over my time to them.
Very well, Vice Chair Chong. We have two testifiers, Duane Dutrailey. If I made a mistake, please correct me on that, and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, good morning. My name is Doug Hill, and I am representing Proceed. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to present, Chair Menor. Proceed was started 25 years ago, was founded by Progressive Center for Education and Economic Development. Initially, it worked to provide low-income housing for the East Side and other St. Paul residents. Proceed also founded the Progressive Early Childhood Education Center more than a decade ago to provide early education for urban youth and the largest Black college tour in Minnesota to expose urban youth to post-secondary options. Currently, Proceed outreach programming has expanded to address the needs of the East Side and now focus on five areas: employment, education, youth enrichment, health, and civic community events. Our mission is to support and cultivate in our youth a robust interest in higher education while providing youth with tools to support education and lifelong success. In the spirit of our mission, we are asking today for a capital investment of $6.7 million to design, construct, furnish, and equip a new community center for East Side of St. Paul. Our vision is for the center to support the community through after-school programs, college preparation courses, and a community health clinic. The center will benefit the community by providing alternative educational models for youth who may not normally see a path to higher education. The after-school program will provide support for students who not only need after hour cares, but will also have staff capable to work with and assist with homework and educational needs. Lastly, Proceed Inc. is partnering with mHealth Fairview Clinic to address the healthcare disparities identified by the Ramsey County Community Health Assessment within the 55106 zip code of East St. Paul. The partnership between Proceed and mHealth Fairview will provide access to healthcare to low and moderate income community members. It is our belief that by partnering with a major healthcare provider, we will be able to leverage the trust that has been established in the community with Proceed Inc. and drive greater healthcare access to low-income residents in that community. Health in all policies is based on the recognition that our greatest challenge, like health inequities, are highly complex and linked to determinants of health. The community will provide education support, healthcare food shelter and youth enrichment programs, and other wraparound services to the community of East St. Paul. We hope that the value of our capital investment ask has been demonstrated through our short presentation. And again, thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Hill, for your presentation on the bill. I don't see any discussion from any members. So the next bill is Vice Chair Christensen, House File 3978. Please introduce the bill and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. In October of 2021, the Washington County Heritage Center had its grand opening, and we were all mesmerized by the performance of Native Americans in a drumming ceremony. The opening was a success, was well attended, and you know, the mission of the center is to preserve, protect, and share the history, the real history of Washington County. The public side of the center is open now to the public, but we are in need of dollars for the storage area of the center. The cost of the project is $1.2 million, and House File 3978 asks for $600,000. The center will match the rest of the funds. So, Mr. Chair and members, I will introduce my testifier, Ryan Collins, who's on the board of the Heritage Center. He wears many hats. He's a local history teacher, and he also sits on the city council. And I have on hand for questions Brent Peterson, who's the executive director of the Washington County Historical Society. So thanks for listening. Yeah.
Thank you, Councilmember Collins. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, and Representative Christensen. My name is Ryan Collins. I'm the Vice President of the Board of Directors of the Washington County Historical Society. I'm here with our Executive Director, Mr. Brent Peterson. Washington County is the gateway to Minnesota, offering a shared history with all Minnesotans. The land that is now Washington County has a story to tell from the Dakota Oyate, the Anishinaabe, those from Europe, Africa, Central America, and Asia. One day our own story, as well as the story of future generations, will also be a part of this legacy. History doesn't just come from textbooks. Artifacts provide meaningful interactions with the past. In October 2021, the Washington County Heritage Center opened with a 12,000 square foot space with exhibit galleries, a research center, and an educational space that is bigger than my middle school classroom. Our galleries include exquisite Native American beadwork from the Ojibwe, black baseball in Minnesota, highlighting Bud Fowler, who played in Stillwater in 1884 and is about to enter the Baseball Hall of Fame. Early photography, fashion, pioneer life, as well as the lumber industry of the late 19th and early 20th century. We are now moving beyond our first phase, and we ask for your help. Preservation of artifacts is a vital part of the process, and we are seeking the space and equipment to properly do that. When an item is donated to our organization, it is expected that we will preserve it in perpetuity. Our current storage space, located on the property of the Warden's House Museum, the surviving remnant of the territorial prison, is full. We simply have no available space. While phase two may not be as flashy as the first, it is the most important for our mission of preserving, promoting, and disseminating the history of Washington County. We worked with the Minnesota Historical Society to ensure our plans meet proper preservation standards. Our storage area will be 4,000 square feet and will cost approximately $1.2 million to complete. Our roof insulation must increase from 3 inches to 10 inches, which is the industry standard and appropriate insulation. Also included are movable storage, shelving, proper storage containers, and 8 new HVAC units on the roof to provide adequate temperature and humidity control. As an educator, I understand the importance of ensuring that history includes all voices, especially those that have been underrepresented in the past. We have a shared legacy as Minnesotans, a legacy that begins with the Dakota and Ojibwe, the original inhabitants, to you and I, and those who will come after us. On behalf of the Washington County Historical Society, we ask for your support of HF 3978 so we may continue to provide this for generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Collins. Mr. Peterson, for a brief comment or statement on the bill.
Mr. Peterson is available for questions if there are any.
All right. Any discussions? Seeing none. Members, thank you so much, Vice Chair Christensen. We now move to House File 4061, Representative Baldwin. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members. I'm grateful for the opportunity to present House File 4061 to you today. The Children's Museum of Rochester is requesting $4 million in state funds to expand and renovate their current space located at the Apache Mall in Rochester. The project estimate includes pre-design, design, and construction of the new and existing spaces, as well as the design, fabrication, and installation of hands-on exhibits to complete the new addition, which also includes a large outdoor green space. The museum's current space is about 10,000 square feet, of which 8,500 square feet are dedicated to exhibits and programming space, and the remaining 1,500 square feet is used for storage and office space. This expansion will provide additional square footage of 7,300 square feet dedicated to more hands-on exhibits. After opening in 2020, the Children's Museum of Rochester saw great success, exceeding every expectation, and they have already outgrown their space with over 50% more visitors than projected. I was just there last weekend, and I can verify this is an excellent resource in our community, and these additional funds will allow them to grow to better meet the needs of the children and families in Rochester. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Lindsay Hemker, who is the Development Director, to share a bit more. Thank you.
Ms. Hemker, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Bolden, for authoring and introducing our bill. Good morning. My name is Lindsay Hemker, and I am the Development Manager for the Children's Museum of Rochester, also known as SPARC. We are also part of the Greater Minnesota Children's Museum Coalition. I am here today to speak to House File 4061, which would provide $4 million for indoor and outdoor expansion and improvements to our current Children's Museum. In August of 2020, we opened our doors in the Apache Mall of Rochester, expecting to support around 40,000 visitors that year. And even during the COVID-19 pandemic, to date, under a year and a half later, we have welcomed over 85,000 visitors, and that's more than doubling our anticipated reach. Our mission is to enrich the lives of young learners by creating shared interactive experiences that engage people of all ages in the joy of play, the power of learning, and sense of community. The Children's Museum of Rochester focuses on STEAM, cultural connectedness, and health and well-being in a collaborative learning environment. Last year, we served 81 counties in Minnesota and had an average of 300 visitors per day, with 25% of those families being served from low-income households. Through the year, the museum has executed over 500 hands-on programs in our space with over 200 community partners. Our expansion will provide access to more hands-on exhibits, programming, summer camps, field trips, free nights for families who may not be able to afford access to our museum. We plan to add over 15 full and part-time jobs to help enhance our visitor experience. Last fall, St. Mary's University of Minnesota Rochester conducted a research survey within the Rochester community, and the results of that survey had showed that over 60% of families have yet to come to the museum due to the pandemic, but indicated that they will attend in the next year or two. Visitors that had attended stated that they would like to see more space, more exhibits, and more outdoor exhibits and activities during those winter months, those warmer months. It is clear that the expansion is needed, and we do not currently have the capacity for growth we have already seen in this short amount of time. Over the course of the pandemic, children's museums have become even more critical and a community asset, serving families in need of educational opportunities outside of their home and school. We see a tremendous need in our community, and we do not anticipate this need subsiding. It is our duty to see that this gap is filled. Thank you for your time and consideration of House File 4061. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'm happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Hemker, for your testimony. I don't see any discussion from members, so thank you so much, Representative Bolden, for presenting the bill. We now move to House File 4088. Chair Dovney.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair, and good morning. Over the past 2 years, U.S. Bank has reevaluated its physical needs in my community in the face of significant changes in how people engage in banking over the last several decades. They have made the generous decision to donate its large parcel fronting on East Lake Street, the major cultural and commercial corridor in South Minneapolis, to a longtime and trusted statewide community institution, CLUES. I'm going to get this wrong, Mr. Chair. Comunidades Latinas Unidas en Servicio for the economic opportunity for an economic opportunity and wellness hub. I got it. I did it.
Well done, Mr. Chair.
My apologies to everyone who speaks Spanish. This East Lake Street location is proximate to a significant and growing Latinx community. The parcel, which will be owned by CLUES, is being developed to also provide space for a Native American-led nonprofit and two Black-led retail and housing spaces, all reflecting the rich diversity of my community. Committee members have a document in their packet outlining the project. With me today, Mr. Chair, is Ruby Lee, President of CLUES.
Ms. Lee, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Good morning, and thank you, Representative Downey, for not only representing our bill, but speaking Spanish for all of us. So thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ruby Lee. I am president of CLUES, Comunidades Latinas Unidas en Servicio. CLUES is Minnesota's largest Latino-led nonprofit, founded 41 years ago, and now with offices in St. Paul, Minneapolis, Wilmer, and Austin, Minnesota. Today, 140 staff and over 600 volunteers provide access and opportunities through multi-generational holistic services that foster neighborhood and cultural development, health and wellness, food, education, certifications, technology training, and economic prosperity building for families and community. CLUES has provided services and outreach on Lake Street in particular for over two decades. As our staff and services have grown, we have been forced to split apart into different rental locations. We are looking to build a permanent home where we can bring back all services under one roof and one-stop hub. Our proposal also contributes toward the local neighborhood recovery and redevelopment on Lake Street. As Representative Downey said, last fall, U.S. Bank selected CLUES and two other nonprofits as beneficiaries of a donation of their property on Lake Street. We are super excited to present our proposal and seek your support to build and own our own economic opportunity and wellness hub on the 2800 block of Lake Street in Minneapolis. Funding will support the pre-design, design, and construction and equipment of our one-stop community hub, where people will have greater access to holistic integrated bilingual services, including adult and youth education, technology and workforce training, employment support, mental and chemical health clinics, a housing resource center, a healthy food area, and daycare center. The one-stop hub will increase access to holistic multi-generational family support services and equitable access for the people of Minneapolis and surrounding cities to thrive. This project is a unique opportunity for all of us and for the state to direct resources to a community in an area that merits redevelopment and support. That concludes my presentation, and I stand ready for questions, if any.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lee, for your presentation, and the president of Comunidades Latina Unidas en Servicio. So we can all learn to speak different languages. So I don't see any discussion from members. Thank you. I know the great work you've been doing, including during the pandemic. So thank you so much for your presentation. Thank you, Chair Downey. The next bill is Vice Chair Bang, House File 4100. Please introduce your bill and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My bill, House File 4100, would appropriate $2,856,000 for a grant to SEWA AIFW, a nonprofit that primarily serves South Asians, immigrants and refugees to acquire, construct, and renovate their facility in Brooklyn Center. I know we're supposed to keep our testimony short, so I'll yield the rest of my time to my testifier, Raj, who's the executive director and can go more in depth about the work of their organization.
Ms. Chaudhary, welcome to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Raj, I think you're muted.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Mohammed Noor for visiting our office in 2020 spring. Do you remember coming to the Lake Street? And we we enjoyed some very good Indian food, samosas and tea and whatnot. But today it's all about the space that we are requesting. This community of South Asians, I wanted to make sure that the committee understands that there's the difference between Southeast Asians and South Asians. The population that I'm speaking about is South Asians coming from India, Pakistan, Bhutan, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Trinidad, Caribbean, Guyana, and now, of course, the newly arrival Afghan refugees and immigrants. So these are the population we serve. We are the second largest Asian immigrant group in the Twin Cities, and who provides services in the area of domestic violence prevention, health initiatives, seniors, youth programs, and much more, and also for refugee resettlement programs. So we can move on the slide next. So one of the things that we are asking this committee is that we have been, like the CLUES person said, that we have been renting spaces here and there, and our needs have increased so much that we were split during 20 and 21 between two locations. It was very difficult to and very challenging to be split in two, three different areas, especially when a portion of the time we were spent to work remote from our homes. So we all would like to be under one roof, and hence we are looking for support from this committee for our Bill 41. We have given all the presentations and letter of support to the committee. Next slide. Here you can see that we have our women's program, very strong women's program. We have a 24/7 crisis line, and that serves the domestic violence victims that call us. 70% of them are domestic violence. Rest are everything else, including the health requirements. Because we are a trusted messengers of MDH and Hennepin County, they look upon us to give out the messaging of COVID or any emergency health information that need to pass. Our second most biggest important that we have given a space to our LGBTQ plus communities. Here, last year in 2021, Seva held the first ever Shakal LGBTQ parade in August of 2021. So we are very proud of the programs and the diversity that we are offering, including healing sessions, workshops, and art, music, and cultural events. So we give a space to all the women, including seniors, LGBTQ plus, women, children, you name it, and we have it. Next slide, please. Here you can see that in 2000, when the pandemic came, we pivoted our programs to serving food and meals and hot meals to the community. And the hot meals are vegetarian, wholesome. We did not have this program until there was a need established by the community. So we, one of the staff members, they offered their home. We were working out of a garage, cooking food and serving and giving out those cultural pantry. The space that we are looking for will be having a community kitchen, so that we are able to serve this aging community. Many of the seniors, as you can see, are homebound. They are not able to get out and do their grocery shopping, so a cultural pantry will be included in there. And also in the community kitchen will be a training program for hospitality industry. So if people are looking for a job, we are able to train people to serve as servers and also chefs that can provide meals and education on how to serve in the hospitality industry. The area also, the seniors that you look here are mainly, there's barriers in languages, there's language barriers, there's transportation barriers. So SEWA is a direct service provider of all these services. Next slide, please. As you can see that we have a men's circle going on. This is to engage the men. Our biggest program is our domestic violence prevention. And so and many of the calls that we received are from women and men. So we are taking this an aid to engage the men and starting with cooking for and learning from each other. Yes.
Mr. I do want to cut you off on your testimony. We're running short today on time. If you can wrap up your testimony, members, when we are now in addressing some of our diversity and cultural needs and many good programs, we will stay for a few minutes to finish our scheduled hearings. And for a few minutes extra, I'll ask you to support us to complete the bills.
Absolutely. So one of the things, essential part is that we are teaching the community, the local area community colleges, hands-on learning experience in these community-based health clinics, where they are trained to get jobs, where the healthcare providers are also getting training. The funding that we have requested in the auditorium area, in the warehouse is to develop that clinics so they can do a hands-on learning experience with cultural communities. With that, I thank you all so much for our presentation.
Thank you so much, Ms. Chaudhary. Any discussion, members? I don't see that. So thank you so much, Vice Chair Vang, and also Ms. Chaudhary for the presentation. Looking forward to seeing the center being built in Brooklyn Center. Chair Devaney, sorry, they'll be moving away from your area. So, with that, House File 4116, Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you guys are short on time, so I'll be very quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next bill is House File 4116, is the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute funding. As you guys know, East Phillips is one of the state's most diverse neighborhood and perhaps most polluted. East Phillips Neighborhood Institute envisions building a space that hosts organic urban farming, local business, and affordable housing. With that, Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers who can explain this ask better, and I'm asking them to be very brief. Thank you.
Thank you. I see Mr. Dean DeVos. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Committee members and chair, thank you. My apologies for my voice. I lost it yesterday at a rally for this project in which we had thousands of people attending. And my name is Dean DeVolis. I am the president of the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute. It is a nonprofit that is driving this project. The East Phillips project is very significant for a bunch of reasons. And we just received a positive vote from the Minneapolis City Council yesterday, and then we attended a rally with three council members. The East Phillips Institute is a 230,000 square foot building in South Minneapolis at 26 in Lindale. It is going to be community owned, meaning owned by the members of the community. Think of the Green Bay Packers and how the community owns those shares and the pride they have, especially helps when you have a good team. This building will have both hydroculture, aquaculture, housing for the homeless, community spaces, environmental spaces, World Cafe, bike shop, and other elements that are being incorporated. It'll also have the largest solar array in the Twin Cities. It'll generate 1,000 jobs within the community. So not only about the employment creation, but the community ownership of the facility, in which will be shares for community members, for building tenants, and for outside investors, which are of interest to. This project will start to pave a new way of development in the Twin Cities. So not the traditional, which is owned by a large landlord outside the community, but of the community, owned and managed by the community. So this is a big deal. And it's a big change that's going to have to happen economically in the process. It's being driven by the cultural communities of East Phillips, the East African community, Latinx community, and the Native American community. So it's really rich in its cultural diversity. It is very vivid in the number of jobs. It'll have the largest solarium in Minneapolis, which Jim has Staples out of North Minneapolis putting together. So it's a complex, rich economic opportunity, so much to the point that the city of Minneapolis and council members are actually looking at using this blueprint that we've developed with the East Phillips community to look at the Lake and Nicollet redevelopment, to look at the Upper Harbor redevelopment, and the Herc site downtown. So committee members, thank you for hearing us out. Thank you for putting up with my voice. It was worth it because at the rally and support for it. So I turn the floor over to my colleague so she may speak. Thank you again for hosting us.
Ms. Hobbs, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and proceed with a brief statement, please. Running out of time.
All right, thank you. Bonjour, my relatives. My name's Cassandra Holmes. I'm a longtime resident at Little Earth of United Tribes, which is makes up about a fourth of East Phillips. It's one of a kind in that it's the only Indian preference housing in an urban area in the country. It represents about 38 different tribes at the moment. That's how many different people live in our 212 unit that come from 38 different tribes. And the reason why this is just so important, for me personally, I have experienced great loss. I had lost my son at 16 years old from a heart condition he was not born with. It was accelerated by our environmental injustice area. And I just wanted to share that, you know, like I'm not the only one who experienced the loss of a child from asthma or heart conditions or lung conditions in this community. And I'm sure I won't be the last. This is just such a big need because it would just give, we need this opportunity for our community, for our community members to have pride in something. This will be green jobs, green training, green housing, green education. And it's so important because, you know, with the death of George Floyd and the loss of a lot of like stores around us during that time, it was farms, but in particular, I will talk about the Little Earth Farm. Our Little Earth Farm really helped our community members in East Phillips and Little Earth and just all around with our food that we were able to get together, that our youth are the ones who planted it. They harvested it and then they bagged it up and shared it with community members who did not have cars, our elders who were not able to make it to the stores. So just this project is so important. This project is so important on so many levels. And I know we don't have a lot of time. So I personally, and I know a lot of members from EPNI, if you want to reach out to us, we'd be more than happy to answer any questions. Exactly. But I just want to say thank you guys for taking the time, for listening to us and for caring and for all of your hard work. So thanks, relatives, and Chi Miigwech.
Thank you.
Chi Miigwech and Ms. Hobbs and Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to offer up my support on this project. A few years back, my friend, former Representative Karen Clark, took me to South Minneapolis, specifically to the neighborhood to take a look. And we were sitting in my vehicle right outside of the building where this project is being proposed. And she shared her vision on the Urban Agriculture Initiative. We also toured the Little Earth Farm there, which the testifier spoke to. So I just want to offer up my support to this project. Thank you to the testifiers, and thank you, Lee Dusan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. I know this is an important conversation, especially in my city, and with an opportunity to create 1,000 jobs. We should never be walking away from communities. We are going to be discussing how we, you know, the funding goes. So the next bill is Chair Lee, who is the Chair for Capital Investments. So please welcome to the committee, introduce your bill, House File 4188, and please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor, Vice Chair Zhang, and Lee Hamilton for the opportunity to present House File 4188. This is for Avenues for Youth, a shelter in North Minneapolis that support youth ages 16 to 24 in Hennepin County. and the request is for $6 million to Avenues to acquire property, design, and build a new trauma center building. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to the director.
Welcome to the committee. Please, Catherine, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Catherine Mears, and I am the Executive Director of Avenues for Youth. Chair Noor, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4188. Also, thank you, Representative Lee, for authoring and introducing this effort. At Avenues for Youth, we support youth experiencing homelessness with shelters in both Minneapolis and Brooklyn Park. Minnesota is facing an unsheltered homelessness crisis. Avenues works every day to address that crisis, but shelter capacity in the metro and statewide is not even close to enough to meet the need. Avenues provides emergency shelter, short-term housing, and support for youth experiencing homelessness in a safe and nurturing environment. Every year, we support more than 300 young people. However, youth homelessness continues to grow. In Minnesota, an estimated 13,300 youth will experience homelessness every year. 73% of them are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. 30% of youth experiencing homelessness report they stayed in an abusive situation because they had no other housing options. Youth experiencing homelessness have distinct needs that are different from those of single adults or families. When provided developmentally appropriate supports, youth can successfully move into stable housing and thrive as young adults. Shantasia, who has allowed me to share her story with you today, is a perfect example. Shantasia came to Avenues after living in an abandoned house and couch hopping. She was angry, depressed, and suicidal. But over time, she opened up to staff about her dream to become a nurse. She took full advantage of the education and employment resources that Avenues offers, and while living at Avenues, she became a certified nurse assistant. She has now moved into her own apartment and is pursuing a career as a registered nurse. Youth like Shantasia need a home to call their own, and shelters can provide that home as they prepare for more permanent options. Avenues plans to build a new building for our shelter and transitional housing program in Minneapolis, one that is trauma-informed and meets the specific needs of youth. Our current Minneapolis building was built in 1934, and it's beautiful, but it served many purposes over the years before being converted to a shelter. The space does not adequately meet the needs of youth recovering from trauma. Crowded conditions forced us to reduce capacity during the COVID-19 pandemic, a reduction that we can ill afford when the need is so great. A new building will allow us to grow our programming to fill the gap between the needs of youth experiencing homelessness and current shelter capacity. But financing shelter capital projects is difficult. From the federal government down to city governments, there are minimal funding options for shelter capital. It requires us to braid multiple funding streams in small amounts over the course of a multi-year campaign. This session, Minnesota has an opportunity to make an unprecedented and historic investment in critical infrastructure that saves lives. If we wait, youth like Shantasia will continue to couch hop, live on the streets, and stay in abusive situations. Avenues is seeking a cash appropriation through the bonding bill to help us build a new facility so we can provide a safer and more accessible shelter for our youth experiencing homelessness. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak to this crucial investment for our organization and our community.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mears, for your presentation. Looking forward to supporting our homeless individuals, so thank you. With that, I don't see any discussion from members. Chair Moran, you're gonna take us home with your bills, House File 3658.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I wanna thank you so much for this opportunity to present bills for this committee today. Today, you know, you've been able to show the great need in diverse underrepresented, disadvantaged, and underserved communities that have historically not been invested in equitably by our state. So this is an opportunity that we can hear, learn, and do better. Because I do believe that that when we begin to see a change in the practice of investment, we can create a more safer, productive, and a stronger state. So my first bill up, Mr. Chair and members, is the House File 3658. The Black Gate will be a Black-owned and operated community asset that will contribute to economic independence for artists and entrepreneurs who have historically been excluded. I have more to say, Mr. Chair. It's been a long day. I'm going to stop there and allow my testifier to proceed.
Mr. Jones, welcome to the committee and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Setu Jones. I am a visual artist based in Frogtown. I've been a practicing artist here in Minnesota for the last 50 years. Thank you, Chair Noor, committee members, and especially thank you, Representative Moran, as my representative and who has introduced this bill to your committee. And thank you for introducing me. The Blackgate, as she said, will be a Black-owned and operated community asset that will contribute to all the economic independence of artists and entrepreneurs who have historically been excluded. Located just two blocks from the Green Line's Dale Street station, the Blackgate will be an economic development initiative in a historically underinvested neighborhood that will create temporary jobs in design and development and construction. It will provide 7 arts-related permanent jobs and provide income-generating opportunities for artists and entrepreneurs via exhibition space, studio space, and education and teaching space. You know, at this time, I would like to ask my fellow presenter, James Garrett, managing partner with Formula Architects, to share a slide with you of our vision. The Blackgate will also add much needed housing and studio space for working artists. The Blackgate will have a commercial kitchen that will allow creative culinary artists the time and the resource to experiment with cuisine. This space will also be able to support community events and activities. The Blackgate will have a library and archives to preserve the works of Minnesota artists of color. The Blackgate will also be a self-sustaining short-term and long-term rental and provide earned income and be a model for other developments focused on preserving the works of artists of color. With an investment of $2.5 million from the state of Minnesota, the Blackgate will be shovel ready within 12 months. And thank you. And I should also say it's an honor to be here with so many deserving projects.
Thank you so much, Mr. Jones. And I don't know if Mr. Garrett wanted to add any to that. Otherwise, wanted to return it back to Chair Moran.
Yeah, I can just be brief. My name is James Garrett Jr., managing partner of Formula. I'm the architect of this project and a mentee of Setu for many years. Setu has had so many contributions to this community and done so much for the neighborhood and for the arts community. I'm also a visual artist. It's time that the community does something for Setu. So I stand behind this project, not only as the designer, but also as a huge supporter of Setu and the Frogtown neighborhood.
Thank you so much, James. And thank you again, Chairman Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Jones and Mr. Garrett, and also Chair Moran for bringing this worthy project forward, because I know the need is greater and we have an opportunity to make a difference. Chair Moran, House File 3659.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So House File 3659 is a capital investment request for acquisition, design, and construction of an innovation center for community gathering, career development, and supportive housing. I'm going to be short because I have a great testifier who will proceed with his part.
Mr. Sana, welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Tony Sani, CEO of the Sani Foundation. Thank you, Chairman Noor, and thank you, Representative Moran, for the support. We want to build an innovation center. We want to do something outside the box that's a little bit different. Obviously, by listening to people, you know that there's a huge shortage of space, especially for communities of colors. And so although we are looking at the need for building culturally specific, we also look at something where it's culturally inclusive, that all walks of life can come in. We would like to build some place where we can be an incubator for businesses and nonprofits to come. We've done a really good job as an organization to leverage our expertise and our infrastructure to help other smaller growing nonprofits. And so other smaller organizations could come and be housed there and use our expertise and co-collaborate. We also look at there's a shortage of community meeting space in this area. It would be designed on the light rail in the Midway area, which would be connected to both cities and around a lot of college students as well. And our goal really is to also add housing in it. And we look for supportive housing that's a little bit outside the box. We've started to buy houses for our staff because people won't rent to them or they don't qualify. And so we would want to have housing in place for community caregivers, people that are going to school to become teachers, AmeriCorps workers, healthcare workers under a certain income level. So thank you. And I'll try to be brief, but we really think that the community needs something a little bit different. We've proven we can be good stewards of money. We're asking for $5 million and we will raise another $7 million to leverage it and then manage it for the next 30 years. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Sennett, for the presentation. Chair Moran.
All right, so we're going to keep moving it. We're going to move on to House File 4097, which is the Hallie Q. Brown. Hallie Q. Brown in St. Paul is a 93-year-old organization that was founded in 1929 for African Americans because of segregation. Hallie Q. Brown today is an African American nonprofit social service agency open to everyone. It has six programs, from early childhood to preschool to the basic needs of a food shelf and the clothing, to programming for seniors, and it's a multi-service hub for programming and projects. And I will stop there and allow my testifier to talk about the work that they do at Hallie Q. Brown.
Mr. Palmer, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Nora. I am Jonathan Palmer, Executive Director for Hallie Q. Brown Community Center. So, Chairman Nora, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today, and Representative Moran for introducing this bill. Hallie Q. Brown, as you said, has been here as the lighthouse of the community, serving as a central gathering point for the African-American community in St. Paul. We're the only African-American organization of our nature in St. Paul. And so we serve as a place that people can gather, people can get resources, connect into the things that they need. During the pandemic, we actually remained open the entire time as an essential service agency, providing childcare for children of essential workers, providing food and emergency resources to people in need. We actually maintained a client choice when most food shelves had to go to a pre-packed box or had to go to closing. We innovated, added an online order form, and created a way for people to still get what they need, taking food out into the community and gathering. We delivered over 1.5 million pounds of food in 2020 and 2021 combined. What we are looking at right now is a project to expand the Martin Luther King Service Center. So our original location was at 553 Aurora. It was a union hall. It was part of the casualties of the highway when it came through the Rondo community. So we constructed the Martin Luther King Center in partnership with the city and have operated there since 1972. In 2000, we did a expansion to increase some of the activity space. And what we're looking at right now is the opportunity to expand with the center. We have our early learning center, which serves 42 children, and it's 6 weeks on up to 5 years. It was originally an FDR New Deal program. And we also have a youth enrichment, which is a school-age program that also provided distance learning during the pandemic, which serves 30 students. However, we have a 250-student waiting list, and it's because we don't have enough program space, classroom space. We also have a wide variety of people coming in for basic needs, food, clothing. We need additional space to be able to provide that to people. Our vision is to create kind of an open space where people can shop for things, where people can get their resources. We also host an archive, a historical archive officially in the center that preserves the history of the Rondo community. One of the key pieces of history in the state of Minnesota, which is in danger of being lost over time. So what we have is a project that will go ahead and create more archive space for preservation and sharing of that history with people all around the state. With the pandemic, we have actually been serving people across the state outside of our service area because of the client choice model we were able to keep. So I will stop there and answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Palmer, for your testimony. I don't see any discussion from members. Chair Moran, to your final bill, House File 4197.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 4197 is the Walker Weston Music Academy, which is really a beacon in the St. Paul community with the Walker family. So the Walker West provides music education to toddlers, to youth, to teens, or adults, anyone who wants to learn. And yes, they offer a variety of lessons for all ages and skill level. Walker West has music education, concerts, community events rooted in the African-American experience for people of all ages to gather, explore, and grow through music. And they were awarded the Regional Cultural Treasures Award by the Ford and McKnight Foundation. And I will stop there to allow my testifier to speak to the need.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Mr. Halsey, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, I'm Braxton Halsey, Executive Director of Walker West Music Academy. What I would like to do is transition this to our founder, Reverend Carl Walker. He can talk a little bit about the community connections, and then he's going to hand it off back to me, and I can give you more specs on the project.
Very well. Reverend Walker, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
See, I know he's on.
You can go ahead, Mr. Halsey. I think
Okay. I am Reverend Carl Walker. I have been with Walker West. We started Walker West in 1988. That's almost 34 years of producing music to the community. I believe that Walker West, as stated before, is a gem of the community. We have participated in the Jazz Fest. We've also received many awards, as was mentioned, including the Sally Award from the Ordway Theater. I would say that we have produced students who are playing all over the United States, as well as in Hawaii and other parts. We feel that we produce teachers, professors, people who are in political office and such. So Walker West is, I would say, one of the most important organizations that's kept the guns out of the Black youth and giving them an opportunity to create with another form of communication. And that is with their hands on the keys or playing orchestral instruments or band instruments. In addition to that, we give them good moral character, so that when they leave Walker West, they can represent well. And thankful, we are so thankful, Grant West and I have had the opportunity to meet so many people. We are actually a global neighborhood at Walker West. So when you see us, you see a representation of what we can all be like if we work together. Thank you so much. So I'll hand that off to Mr. Braxton, who is the Executive Director of Walker West.
Mr. Halsey.
Yeah, thank you so much, Reverend Walker. One of the things that people don't realize is that Walker West is the oldest community music education school in the United States, founded by two Black musicians. When I came in Walker West in 2018, we transformed the organization through a strategic plan. And part of that transformation meant that we cover all ages, as Representative Moran had indicated. We now have an early childhood music program in partnership with McPhail. We now work with teenagers in our digital music production class, where we're really beginning to partner with Hamline University to develop a career path through digital music. So, you know, you can make your beats, you can learn how to produce music, learn how to do audio and sound and things of that sort. And then the other thing that a lot of folks don't realize, we have an award-winning dementia-friendly choir called the Amazing Grace Chorus, and they are just outstanding. So we see music as a tool for the infants. Music provides brain development and impulse control and gets them ready for school. For elders, it provides healthy aging of the brain. And as I mentioned, we have we serve 5,700 program participants per year. We're doing 250 lessons per week. And we
Mr. Braxton, mm-hmm. could you I know I'm going to get ahead of Mr. Chair, if you don't mind.
Okay. No, go ahead.
Can you talk a little bit about the request now? Because I okay. know we're running on short of
yes.
time.
Yes, okay. I'll move right to it. The request is to purchase a new space. Our lease is non-renewable, and it ends at the end of next year. And the co-tenant is slated to get our space. We need to move. We just put a bid on the Wilder Foundation Adult Daycare facility, and we are in the midst of trying to purchase that facility. That would move us from 6,000 square feet to 15,000 square feet. The project is about $5.5 million. We're asking the state for $2.5 million. We're going to raise the other $3 million through funders and foundations. We have David O'Fallon on our capital campaign committee. And if you guys are familiar with David, he was the former CEO of McPhail Center for Music and for the Minnesota Humanities Center. And he's raised funds for those buildings as well. Does anybody have any future questions?
Don't see any questions from members. Chair Moran, your closing remarks for the day.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I just want to say thank you again for this opportunity. There's a lot of great programming here. St. Paul, you know, is a hub for really community building and keeping our kids and youth safe. And I think when we do that, we just really do create a more safer, thriving, productive, not just a Minnesota, but a safer a region and a safer state. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you, Chair Moran. With that, I think members, we've learned a lot about history, culture, and diversity, and the need that exists. We can continue on and on, but I just wanted to thank you, members, for staying for the extra few minutes. And with that, no agenda items. We are now adjourned. Thank you so much.